Let's begin today's program with our first speaker, Alan Guelzo. Alan, go ahead.
Larry, it is a pleasure once again to be talking to you and to your audience. And today, I'm going to talk about Robert E. Lee, who, in the days before the American Civil War, could have been considered the very model of an American soldier. He was the son of a Revolutionary War hero, Light Horse Harry Lee, protege of George Washington. He entered West Point in 1825, did so well. He was graduated in 1829, second in his class, went into the elite Corps of Engineers, and earned his most impressive military bouquets serving under Winfield Scott in the Mexican War. He was Scott's chief aide in the dramatic campaign from the coast at Veracruz to Mexico City in 1847. He later then served as superintendent of West Point. Then from 1855 to 1861, Lee was the lieutenant colonel of the 2nd Cavalry. And then finally, with the outbreak of the Civil War, he was offered field command of the United States forces in dealing with the breakaway Southern Confederacy. And at that moment, he turned his back on more than 30 years of service and took command, first of the Virginia State Forces, and then of the principal Confederate Field Army, the Army of Northern Virginia, which he led to many victories, but finally was compelled to surrender in 1865. Almost nothing in those preceding 30 years gives the slightest hint of the decision he made to leave the Army, to go back on his oath to defend the United States, to really commit treason against the United States. So the great question about Robert E. Lee is why? Why did he do it? His general answer in 1861 was that he was a Virginian. And when Virginia seceded from the Union and joined the Confederacy, he was obliged to follow them. But really, was he? Robert E. Lee was born in Virginia in 1807, but he'd grown up in Alexandria, which was then part of the District of Columbia. And most of the places to which he had been assigned in his long career as an engineer were other places: Georgia, St. Louis, Baltimore, New York City. In fact, the curiosity is that he actually spent more time consistently in New York than he did almost any other place in the country. What Lee could not ignore were two very important factors that were confronting him. First of all, his father, the great Light Horse Harry Lee, had been a real hard luck husband and father. And he left his family for the West Indies when Robert was only 6 years old. The shadow that Light Horse Harry cast over the Lee name was one that Robert struggled all his life to redeem. So there's always this broad streak of perfectionism in his behavior. But he also yearned to breathe free of his father's reputation in other ways. He wanted independence. He wanted to be his own man. And in one sense, when he marries Mary Randolph Custis, he's marrying into one of the first families of Virginia. That's an attempt to stake out a realm for himself. But he also yearns for security. So while most of his contemporaries in the Army resign their commissions and go into private practice, he stays in the Army because it's secure employment. Now, the hinge factor where this touches his decision was the family estate at Arlington. This is today the Great National Cemetery, but in Lee's day, it was his wife's property. It was the property of the Custis family. He lived there, and it was as much to protect Arlington for his family as it was for Virginia that he chose to resign his commission and refuse the offer of command. But that's only one factor. The other factor in Lee's decision is his expectation that there really was not going to be a civil war after all. He makes this decision on April 20th, 1861. Now, hard as it may be for us to appreciate this, in April of 1861, even after the secession of the Southern states, even after the firing on Fort Sumter, it was not clear that the crisis would only result in a civil war. Lee could have simply resigned and stayed neutral, or he could accept the invitation extended to him to take command of Virginia forces and play the role of mediator between Virginia and the Union, and thus achieve by peacemaking a fame greater than his father had ever enjoyed. Now, it didn't turn out that way. Like many others, Lee found the secession crisis galloping away from him. And in the end, step by step by step, he found himself by 1862 as the commander of the Army of Northern Virginia. And he played that role as perfectly as he tried to play every other role in life. That he failed did not necessarily surprise him. On the way to Appomattox, he frankly admitted that he'd always expected that the war would turn out the way Appomattox showed that it would. But at least his conduct would show how he could rise even above defeat. So in the end, he still keeps that pursuit of perfection intact. But I think that's the real nub of what we sometimes call the decision, but which is really a series of incremental decisions that leads Robert E. Lee away from being a model U.S. Army officer to becoming the Robert E. Lee who becomes the great Confederate general.
Thanks, Alan.